It's a disease estimated to affect more than 1.7 million Australians, but 90% of them are completely unaware they have the condition. Chronic kidney disease has been on the rise for some time. The number of people undergoing dialysis and transplants has more than doubled in the last two decades. And as COVID-19 emerges as a new risk factor, experts say the need for early detection has never been more important. Health Report producer Shelby Traynor has the story.
It really is a silent killer. I'm a perfect example of that. Healthy, as I thought, 29-year-old. I'd just come back from my honeymoon on a high and was working full-time, really busy, you know, planning for the future. I lost 90% of my function and almost died and was completely unaware.
I think the best option is to just start from the beginning again. I know it's a long story, but I feel
it is, yeah.
Just for consistency. Leslie Tozer spoke to me on one of the 4 days a week that she isn't hooked up to a machine that has taken over the role of her kidneys. She's one of the almost 15,000 Australians currently on dialysis, a treatment that removes waste products and excess fluid from the blood. It's a treatment that 11 years ago, Leslie admits, she knew very little about.
I just felt extremely fatigued more than usual. And I had some swelling in my ankles. Instinct prevailed and I went to see my GP just to get a full blood count, assuming that I did have just anemia. And, you know, I thought the doctor's probably just going to put me on some iron tablets. The doctor gave me a call. It was on a Friday evening saying, your blood test results are severely abnormal. It's showing that your kidneys are failing. There's an ambulance coming for you to take you to the Alfred. Really surreal to hear, it didn't really sink in. I mean, going from thinking that I was just run down to the fact that I was dying.
Leslie was told that if she didn't undergo treatment immediately, she would be dead by Monday. While it's a dramatic story, it's not an uncommon one. Chronic kidney disease often goes unnoticed until there's already been irreversible damage.
It's a very silent disease. You can lose 90% of your kidney function before you have any symptoms. My name is Professor Carol Pollock and I am the chair of Kidney Health Australia.
Are you able to just give me a quick summary of what chronic kidney disease is and why you're so interested in looking at that?
Maybe it's easier if I start off what the kidney normally does, which is it normally filters the blood and removes toxins and unwanted materials from the blood. So when we get chronic kidney disease, it's basically a failure of those processes.
Anyone can develop chronic kidney disease, but one in three Australians are at an increased risk because of diabetes, high blood pressure, or certain lifestyle factors.
And unfortunately, both diabetes and high blood pressure should be treated adequately to prevent the development of kidney disease. But in fact, it accounts for more than 50%. Being overweight and smoking are also risks. And people with an Indigenous background, unfortunately, have about a sevenfold increased risk. A proportion of people have a genetic cause of kidney disease that is, to this point, non-modifiable.
Leslie was otherwise healthy when she arrived at the hospital. Initially, doctors thought she had cancer, but after 2 weeks of chemotherapy, she was diagnosed with a rare disorder called Goodpasture syndrome.
My immune system gets confused and attacks all the cells in my body, particularly, well, obviously the kidneys. It just wiped them out. I had about 10 to 15% function, which I was managing okay. I was very tired. Then fast forward a year later, keeping in mind I was on a contraceptive pill, I somehow miraculously was pregnant. The nephrologist couldn't believe it. My GP couldn't believe it. They knew that he was going to have to come out early, 36 weeks. That was the hope. However, my kidneys completely failed when it got to 29 weeks and 5 days. It was much safer for him to come out. It was very scary for my poor husband, having both his newborn son in NICU and his wife in ICU. When my son was 5 months old, my nephrologist said, you know, unfortunately, you have to start dialysis now or else, you know, you can't continue living. So first question that anyone asks, really, and I certainly did and my husband did, was how long? How long, A, can I live on dialysis, and how long is it going to be until I'm lucky enough to get a transplant?
Transplantation is an excellent treatment for chronic kidney disease, but dialysis really is just a treatment that keeps people alive, and it causes a huge impact on people's health. The screening to have a transplant is quite extensive, and not everybody is eligible. And of course, we have a very long waiting list for a transplant. And during that period, while people are on dialysis, they're at risk of having heart attacks and strokes that mean that their ability to have a transplant may well diminish with time on dialysis.
Obviously, they can't give you an actual time, but they can give you a time frame. And the time frame in Australia is 3 years, roughly. And to me, initially, I thought, whoa, that's a lot. How am I going to do this? You know, having a newborn baby, I was pretty shocked. However, I got used to it and I actually got quite excited and a little bit of adrenaline, thinking my life's going to change soon. I'm going to get some sort of normality in life back. When that call comes, always checking my phone when it was a private number or anything. My mind was just totally in that loop, I guess, even to the point where I had my car packed, like in the back, like with hospital clothes. Between year three and year four, that's when I found it most difficult mentally. Like, I really had a bit of a breakdown then. I just thought, it's never going to happen. It's just not coming. And it just, to be honest, after it got to the 4 or 5 year mark, I'd started back at work, really just put the idea of transplant out of my head, because I've just got to get on with my life and just appreciate each day and not be just waiting, wishing my life away and waiting for this magic call that might never come.
Since her diagnosis, Lesley has maintained a stubbornly high level of antibodies, meaning if she were to receive a new kidney, it's likely her body would reject the transplant.
So it's 11 years now. It was 11 years last week. I've been on dialysis.
According to a report from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, the number of people receiving kidney replacement therapy more than doubled between the year 2000 and the year 2020. In 20 years, the number of patients went from 11,700 to 27,700. Chronic kidney disease was listed as either an underlying cause of death or, more commonly, an associated cause of death in 11% of all the deaths recorded in Australia in 2020. That's 17,700 deaths, and it's likely that number is an underestimation.
My name's Karen Dwyer. I am a kidney specialist, and I also am a professor of medicine at Deakin University and the clinical director at Kidney Health Australia. I'm not surprised with the data that was presented. It's very clear when you're on the ground that there's a huge increase in the number of people with kidney disease and then progressing to kidney failure.
From 2019 to 2020, dialysis was the most common reason for hospitalisation in Australia. But a majority of patients actually undergo treatment at units that are separate from hospitals. The number of patients receiving dialysis at these satellite units has increased more than 250%.
It's really difficult for us to be able to find dialysis units that have capacity to support these individuals. If we've got dialysis running for, say, 5 hours and someone needs it three times a week, it's not something that you can just pull in an additional chair and there you go. We've got a lot of equipment that goes along with that.
The pressure is especially being felt in regional areas where the rate of chronic kidney disease is three times higher than in major cities, and numbers are only expected to rise further. Modelling from Australia's Dialysis and Transplant Registry predicts another 4,000 people could be on dialysis by the end of the decade.
So kidney disease has been on the rise for a while, primarily because we're seeing a big rise in diabetes, and that's the main cause of kidney failure. But what we may see is a further rise in chronic kidney disease as a consequence of COVID infection. So there is emerging data that kidney injury is very common in somebody that gets COVID infection. And we know that an episode of kidney injury during an acute illness sets someone up for increased risk of future chronic kidney disease and kidney failure.
Acute kidney injury causes a buildup of waste products in your blood and makes it hard for the kidneys to keep the right balance of fluid in the body.
Researchers from the University of Queensland actually recently led a study into acute kidney injury in COVID patients. Dr. Marina Weinstein was part of the team.
In terms of what causes kidney injury in COVID-19, there are a number of physiological pathways for the kidney injury, which includes damage to the microstructure of the kidney from blood pressure changes. We also know that patients with COVID tend to clot more easily, and this can affect the small blood vessels of the kidney. We know the immune system, there's a degree of dysregulation in COVID, and that also can cause a local inflammatory effect to the level of the kidney. And finally, in some cases, there can be direct viral invasion of the kidney.
It's becoming clear that acute kidney injury, or AKI, isn't always picked up in patients who fall seriously ill with COVID-19. Usually, AKI is diagnosed by looking at the rise of a byproduct called creatinine, but researchers decided to also look at the fall of creatinine levels in COVID patients to detect people who experienced kidney injury before being admitted to hospital.
Using an extended definition that included both the rise and the fall in serum creatinine identified almost twice as many cases of AKI than the traditional definition, so 31 versus 16%.
While acute kidney injury is reversible, it does increase a person's risk of developing chronic kidney disease down the line. Dr. Weinstein says that's why catching these cases when they happen is so important.
The GP will generally try to address the risk factors that will determine the trajectory of the patient's kidney injury, improving things like the blood pressure, sugar control in diabetics, and lifestyle factors like diet and physical activity, as well as smoking cessation if needed.
I suspect that we will see a further increase in kidney disease above what perhaps we had modelled pre-pandemic.
Professor Karen Dwyer says acute kidney injury isn't the only risk. COVID-19 can worsen or even increase the risk of developing diabetes, which is the leading risk factor for chronic kidney disease, while some people with long COVID see a decline in kidney function.
We need to slow this progression down. We really need to start thinking about how do we prevent somebody actually reaching kidney failure. This is where we need to really go, okay, let's look at early detection of kidney disease, get in early, find the diagnosis, and then provide people with strategies, managements, treatments to actually slow progression, but most importantly, maintain health and well-being and not wait for somebody to develop that more severe sort of end stage or kidney failure phase.
So what are the options for someone who's diagnosed with chronic kidney disease early? Well, one promising treatment, dapagliflozin, was just added to the pharmaceutical benefits scheme. Professor Carol Pollock has studied the drug's protective effects.
People who were taking dapagliflozin were 39% less likely to have a 50% decline in their kidney function. They were 39% less likely to reach end-stage kidney disease or die a cardiovascular or a kidney death. So that's incredibly important. If these drugs are used early, their kidney function actually stabilizes completely. If they're used later, then it delays the decline in kidney function, but that's why it's important to detect kidney disease early so these drugs can be used early and stabilize kidney disease.
Professor Karen Dwyer says education is key for both members of the public and practitioners.
The fundamental to all this is the focus again on health and well-being, the importance of nutrition good nutrition, removing ultra-processed foods, addressing the consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages, which we know impacts so many aspects of somebody's health, advocacy on physical activity, stress management, sleep, all these fundamental, what I call sort of foundational components of management. These are the things that people can be empowered to self-manage, but they need to be given the right advice.
It's thought 1.7 million Australians are unaware they're currently living with the early signs of kidney disease. That's 11% of adults in the country. In Leslie's case, it's uncertain what triggered her illness, but she believes if she'd been more aware of the symptoms, or if doctors had caught it sooner, she might have avoided dialysis entirely.
The early detection, it's just life-altering, you know. And it's the difference of being on life support and being tied to a machine or being able to just take a tablet. Please don't end up like me. Listen to your instinct. Listen to your guts. You've got a risk factor of high blood pressure. You develop, you know, a lot of headaches. You notice any changes in your urine output. Go and get a blood test, simple blood test done. Even just having your blood pressure checked is a very good indicator as to what your kidneys are doing. The earlier that you can get checked can make a difference between life or death, essentially, or, you know, a very different life from one that you would have planned.
That was Leslie Tozer finishing off that story by Shelby Trainer.
Getting in touch with ABC RN is easy. Join the conversation live using the ABC Listen app's call and text features.